Okay, I'm being heard. Great. So the title of my talk, Reggie, is Moshe Could Not See That He Had Already Arrived. So I wrote this a while ago, and I came back to it to check it out. And I started sobbing. The Vi'et Chanan means he pleaded. Moshe was pleading with God to let him go into the promised land. And God definitively said no. And I think it just connected to a place of terror in me about losing my mind, and like that there was a pleading. It allowed me to like feel the pleading. Please don't, take it all away. So that was the upshot. So now we are in the period right after Tisha B'Av, the month of Av, where we officially enter a collective spiritual journey together. For the next 7 weeks, we practice tshuva, turning, returning, being turned toward this unfolding of being. In 7 weeks, we will enter the gates of the high holy days with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And according to Rabbi Alan Liu, may his memory be a blessing, Tisha B'Av is when we remember our estrangement from God. It's the beginning of a process of tshuva, return. For me, that means we have 7 weeks to yearn, cry, call out, 7 weeks to deepen our experience of how our lives depend on reconnecting with the divine flow, which of course is the heart of our practice. Last week, in the first parasha of Deuteronomy, Moshe recounts to the people their 40-year journey together. Moshe complains that the people have been a bickering burden to him, but alas, in the moment, he has no idea that the burden is about to lift and that it will break his heart. Because in this week's parasha, he finds out that his work is done, finished. He is not to go into the promised land, to the land of promise. God tells him definitively, "You will not enter the promised land." Has anything ever sounded more unfair? Maybe my diagnosis is as unfair. And that's the power, I think, of this week's parasha to allow space for that grappling. So I pleaded with Havaya, Be'et Ha'hu, in this moment, crying out, and I was weeping at this point. Oh, Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, you who let your servant see the first works of your greatness and your might. You whose powerful deed no God in heaven or earth can equal. And that's an amazing line because it's like acknowledging there are different gods in heaven and earth. He continues, let me, I pray, cross over and see the good land on the other side of the Jordan, that good hill country and the Lebanon. But God immediately tells him, on no uncertain terms, no way, Moshe. Even though you have taken the people out of the narrow places of Mitzrayim and guided them through 40 years in the desert sands, and have put all your mind, heart, body, breath in service to getting the Israelites to a land of promise, no, you cannot enter the land of promise. And certainly not when you are pining for something that you cannot have and feel and are feeling unfairly mistreated, with your deepest hopes and expectations dashed. The dashing of the deepest hopes for the Israelites sound a lot like the world that I live in, not just because of my diagnosis, but with the daily news feed that each day dashes my hope to enter a land of promise. or sanity or care for the other dashes my hopes for a place where people stop destroying earth, sea, sky with pervasive, unchecked greed, hatred, and delusion. So Moshe now turns to the people he's been shepherding and blames them. Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh was wrathful with me on your account. So I ask you, my dear meditators, have you ever noticed blaming yourself or blaming others for what you could not get or make happen that you so desperately wanted? So Moshe says, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh would not listen to me and said to me, enough, never speak to me of this matter again. V'et Hanan, he pleaded, is always the parasha following Tisha B'Av. And Tisha B'Av, we let ourselves feel, embody this total brokenness and the collapse of everything we hold dear, everything we work hard to manifest in the course of a lifetime and in community together. Sorry. Over the course of countless lifetimes, I posit that our practice teaches that without letting in that brokenness, without a chance to feel and express our grief, there can be no rebuilding, no learning about how to live in this brief life. We turn now into the book of Deuteronomy, the last and final book of Torah. That is literally the second telling. Moshe recounts in his own voice the adventures of birthing a Jewish people that will become a nation. The word nation in our postmodern parlance mostly indicates political entity whose borders include some folks and exclude others. And as a historian, I can officially attest to the fact that there is no example of a nation whose borders are not contested or problematic, including some people who think they should be in the nation or wanting to be in the border somewhere else. So much of the Israelite journey is to try to cultivate recognition that there is some kind of a God-given eternal connection. In Deuteronomy, Moshe speaks in his own words the details of what God has taught the people. He reminds them all of the laws and the rules that will enable them to live as a free people together in a new land. Moshe's plea illuminates for me a practice that has been hidden. It makes me realize that one of the things that undergirds my meditation practice is that there is an underlying pleading, often unacknowledged, that my act of commitment to sit still, to come back to this breath and body, to return to the essential reality of being alive, moment after moment, day after day, year after year, perhaps lifetime after lifetime, has a kind of hidden plea. Yes, this world and life is overwhelming, ornery, scary, and beyond my control, beyond my comprehension, and it does not conform to my preferences. So please, please, please let me go see what is beyond this unintelligible, narrow self. Please realize, release me from the narrow place that feels lonely because I am a unique subject to the rest of the entire universe's objects. Where is there comfort if our lives are like dust, with this aliveness a mere blink of an eye? If nothing like me has ever existed and never will again, how do I experience that life? Please let me experience a wider reality, interconnecting flow of all being. Please let me see beyond my narrow defensive sense of being a separate, solid self. So now, in the weeks of Tshuva, We turn towards this divine flow of life. Let me fully enter this brokenheartedness that may lead to openheartedness. Help me face the suffering within me and around me and throughout the world in ways that nurture a heart of compassion in the midst of so many attacks on and collapse of what is good. Starting with Tisha B'Av, our tradition gives us a break from having to be strong with it all, of trying to stay positive, visionary, activist. Once Be'et Hanan helped me to see the underlying unacknowledged pleading in my own practice and life, it was obvious we need all the help we can get. There was a period of time that every night when I got into bed, I laid my head down on the pillow and I clicked on my phone to listen to a Dharma talk that took the edge off the anxiety of this delusion of being a separate self and the burden and the bickering that comes with that turf. The talks would communicate in so many different ways that we're not only separate selves, but also deeply interconnected. The talks managed for a few moments to lift the burden of schlepping around a false construct of identity. And they were so reassuring that I seldom heard more than 5 minutes before falling asleep. That's Dharma talks as great drugs. So when Moses implores God to allow him to enter the promised land, God's response is interpreted by Moshe with an angry and terrible no. Withholding of grace, and I would add in our meditation practice, we practice with this kind of aversion. We sit still with so many terrible no's. No, no. This is not the moment or world that I want. Meeting that aversion with kindness turns into a path of liberation and radical acceptance and compassion. It reminds me of what my teacher Shoshana Cooper used to say, which is that my path is the path of disappointment. So I think that means that the extent to which Moshe can't change the disappointment demands that he must be with the heart-wrenching disappointment of not being able to fulfill his deepest longing to enter the land of liberation. So God answers Moshe's disappointment with Rav Lach, which I can also identify with, which means Rav Lach, you have so much. You have so much. I have so much, and you have so much. Your relationship with your people and with me, your God, is everlasting. And here comes the title of our talk. Moshe could not see that he had already arrived. Moshe could not see that he had already arrived. By his fortitude, his dedication, his discipline to not turn away from suffering, his own and his people's, he enters a land of promise, if not the promised land, a promised land. So God tells Moshe to climb up the mountain and lift his eyes. He is being invited to receive a glimpse of the promised land, a land of new, unknowable possibilities. From the summit of this mountain, everything we thought separate, all of the opposites that we have warred within us, are suddenly united, all echad, all one. Then the fullness of love that is always there can flow and can be given and can be received. Then, quote, you shall love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. This prayer appears in this parasha. And Shefa writes, when we experience the knowledge of the unity beyond duality, it takes root in us, inside us, and we become lovers of the highest order. Viet Hanan offers us the challenge of transforming the power of desire from a potential prison into a vehicle for enlightenment. Each of us must climb the mountain of our own desires, and I would add the mountain of our own aversions, and lift our eyes to see beyond what you have come to expect or imagine. Imagine. I think that everything you see is exactly what you need to awaken, to crack open the places where you are still numb, or yearning for something, or pushing away something. Instead of trying to think our way out of pain or the tight places, we can bring some love, some patience, over and over again to what is hard and drop into direct experience. It's exactly like this right now, in body, in heart, mind, spirit. Chef again writes, lift your eyes beyond your own limited expectations. Climb the mountain to take in the wide expanse. You don't need to cross the Jordan. You are already home. You are already home. Yes, Shefa, we take this journey of our lives in order for our eyes to open. Moshe is too distressed to see Be'et HaHu in this moment, that there is no place to get to. Or perhaps you could say his whole life and all its circumstances, and our whole life and all its circumstances, have been bringing us into a land of promise all along. But in this moment, he cannot see that he has already arrived and has been arriving in each moment of his amazing life and our amazing lives. Perhaps there is a poignant joke that is on Moshe and on each of us, that only by bringing love to our longing for a better outcome, bringing love to our wish for a different life, a better world, a different spouse, a different body, a different diagnosis, etc., can we live in a land of promise? In this heart of tshuva, turning towards what is, enables us to act in ways that align with our deepest human vision. Perhaps in that moment, when we stop trying to alter this life, does transformation actually occur? So it's awkward to be a living human being with eons of evolutionary ancestral baggage. And in a paradoxical way, then, it's this very estrangement, this wanting and not wanting, the wish to enter a promised land, that then drive both my underlying pleading and my commitment to return and turn again to this living, fleeting moment with a bit more love and compassion. And I want to close with something that if I can find from Aviva Zornberg, here it is. Okay, so you remembered I was talking about the sobbing that came when I was hearing the word Viet Hanan to plead. So here's Dr. Aviva Zornberg. I was shocked to read this. She relates an intense encounter with Moshe's predicament. This is from her first book entitled Moshe, A Human Life. And she writes, I once took part in a bibliodrama workshop at the rabbinical retreat. In the morning, I taught Bible and rabbinics, and in the evening, I joined my students for the bibliodrama. We were asked to enter the role of a biblical character, and I chose to portray Moshe in the scene where he beseeches God, Viet Hanan, God to allow him to cross over the River Jordan and enter the Holy Land. And as I, Zornberg, began to speak as Moses, I found myself weeping. I couldn't help wondering why the use of the first person form, taking in the pleading for oneself, had stirred such unexpected depths of pain. Who was speaking? I as Moses? Turned out to be a volatile combination. The paradox of Moshe's plight, has always been with me in my teaching, but never so profoundly. By switching to the first person, had I released a flood of grief. In a sense, I was allowing myself, my I, to be read by the text. It was undergoing a harrowing transpersonal experience that exposed myself to the gaze of hearing of the text of Moshe's words interspersed with my own. And Zornberg goes on to say that this I seeks light where it can be found, even in the dark places of modern Jewish identity. And this I is affected by intimate affinities with aspects of Moses's experience. So that blew me away after I was sobbing in the beginning and then sobbing at the end. Oh my goodness. Anyway, thank you for your kind listening. Let's see, there's a lot more, but I'm going to stop here.